Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome to ABQ Connect. Good afternoon. Jim Williams here with one of our favorite guests, Ray Mondragon, Creation Science Fellowship. Ray, welcome to ABQ Connect. How are you?
Well, it's good to be with you. Actually, I was hoping to be in Israel at this time, but I guess you'll be good enough for me.
Well, you have to settle for second best, and we're really nice around here, so I'm glad you could join us. Yeah, Israel would have been a fun trip. I know that Pastor Skip had to cancel a trip to Israel in late February, early March that they had planned, and we actually have had a couple of conversations where Skip was on the phone with Joel Rosenberg, who was actually in quarantine in Israel, and of course they did a real big series, two or three shows that was nationally syndicated, talking with Joel, and they really had an interesting conversation about pandemics and the coronavirus and biblical background on a lot of things, plagues and so forth that have happened over the years, over actually the last thousand years or so. So they had a really nice conversation. But Ray, I'm really glad you're here with us. I want to take all of our listeners through what we started about a year ago. We started, I think, the last week of June or the first week of July last year. And we started talking about evolution, and we started talking about the so-called science. Now, all of us know evolution as the theory of evolution, and what you've really revealed to us over the last year is that there really is not much to the theory, and there's not much to the science. And then you talked about creation, and you gave us some biblical background, and you gave us some scientific type of support for creation science and what that's all about. And then here about 4 or 5 weeks ago, well, actually longer than that now, probably 8 to 10 weeks ago, we started talking about the evidence for creation in Scripture, and now we've been talking the last couple times we've gotten together about the flood and the biblical background that we can find for a worldwide flood. Like last time we met, you talked about the fact that it wasn't localized. It wasn't regional. It was a worldwide flood. And you reviewed Genesis 6 through 9, which would encourage all of our listeners to take a look at that. But the main reason, Ray, that I enjoy talking with you, and I'm so blessed that you spend the time with us, is because I want Christians to understand that because you are a person of faith, you do not need to abandon the thinking process. You do not need to think. People can't accuse you of leaving your brain at the door. You are absolutely, totally, intellectually and spiritually spot on when you believe in Jesus and you use the Bible as a historical document and not only your spiritual guide. Would you say that's true?
Well, absolutely. In fact, I would even add that our faith has to be placed on something that's substantial. In other words, we don't have a blind faith. We have a faith that is based on reality, based on truth. Mm. And that's what we need to seek out, is what is true. And we start with the Bible. The Bible tells us what is true, and it deals with scientific issues. So not only scientific, but historical, and every academic area the Bible touches on and gives us a different perspective from the lost world. And we need to focus on the Scriptures, and that's what we're doing in this series on science and the Scriptures.
Well, the last couple times we've talked about historical geology. Now, most people that are secular scientists are going to call themselves geologists, but they refer to this concept known as historical geology. And you've made several statements and read some actual statements made by these folks that there does not exist in the geological record or the anthropological record, there's no evidence for a worldwide flood. And yet you took us through Genesis and talked about all the support for a worldwide flood. And are we talking today, Ray, about the scientific evidence for a worldwide flood?
We're going to start with it. I'd like to kind of lay a foundation of the science and contrast the two different models or two different viewpoints, the one that you just alluded to, which is pretty much the secular viewpoint. They look at what's called the geological column, and I'd like to discuss it a little bit and then contrast a different viewpoint of the geological record. And there's a flood model that creationists look to, and I'd like to discuss a little bit of it today.
Well, Ray, I'm going to turn you loose, my brother. I want you to tell us what you think about, review for us quickly what you'd like to review and get us rolling on this scientific evidence, if you will.
Well, last time, let me just quickly remind us that we looked at the biblical record. And if we believe that the Bible is inspired, and I would even add inerrant, and even add to that, it's inerrant in every area that it deals with, not just theology, not just spiritual things, but it's inerrant when it deals with science and when it deals with history. In fact, every area that the Bible touches on, I would hold to an inerrant Bible. And if that's the case, and you read the biblical text, chapter 6 through 9, essentially, where we have the record of the Genesis flood, you can't come to any other conclusion than what is described there is a universal and or we could call the same thing a worldwide flood. And that was our focus last time. I tried to show from the biblical text, you have to really spiritualize the passages, twist them, turn them, cut them up, remove them in order to get to anything other than a universal worldwide flood. Now, the reason there even is a viewpoint that the flood had to be localized or a local flood idea is because most theologians and most believers have been intimidated by the statements of the historical geologists. And you mentioned that historical geology holds to the viewpoint that there's no evidence in the rock layers or the geological record of a universal flood. Lots of floods, several individual ones, but no universal worldwide flood. So the issue is, well, what do you do with the Bible? And what most believers end up doing, if they want to believe in science and they want to believe in the Bible at the same time, you have to compromise. And usually what gets compromised is the biblical text. And for many years now, in fact, the majority view within the church itself is the Genesis flood had to be localized in Mesopotamia. So that's the local flood view. There's a couple of variations of it, but essentially all of the variations are a compromise of the biblical text. So what I'm proposing, and young earth creationists believe, we believe in the inerrancy of Scripture, so there must be physical, hard rock, scientific evidence somewhere that gives us evidence for a Genesis flood. And if you evaluate the same data, in other words, we're not looking at something different than the historical geologist, you can find within the same data overwhelming evidence of a universal flood. And that's what I want to begin to give you in this session. And if we do a continuation of it the next time, we'll pick up where we left off.
Well, Ray, I want to stop.
That's kind of the essence of what I'd like to do today is give you the contrast between the two models. In other words, there's two ways of looking at the same data. And I'll give you the secular view, first of all, and then I'd like to contrast that with the view that has been developed by believers that believe in the Bible, but also are from a background of geology or geophysics.
Ray, well, I need to
ask
you.
That's kind of the essence.
Let me ask you a question, though, before you start into what you want to teach us today, and that is, if the creation scientists are evaluating the same data as the historical geologists and they're coming up with two different conclusions, what is the bias that is causing that?
Well, the main bias, obviously, the secularist leaves God out of the picture entirely. And as a result, he will neglect the biblical text, or he may be totally unaware of what the Bible teaches. Whereas the believer is looking at the biblical text and saying, well, there has to be some scientific evidence. And the unbeliever, I believe, is just blinded to the evidence that is in plain view. And that's some of the evidence that I want to present to you.
Rick,
we won't get to a lot of the details today because I think we'll spend most of our time contrasting the two models. And in the time that remains, I'll get us started in some of the clear evidence.
Ray, this bias. Let me ask this question. This seems like a bias to me that is nonsensical.
Absolutely.
And let me give you an analogy. You know, I'm an old basketball guy. You and I talk hoops once in a while. And several years ago, when I was in college, they didn't have a 3-point line. And then those darn point guards went out and said, we're tired of throwing the ball into the big man, so we're going to invent this line that's away from the basket. Well, we'll get 3 points, and no longer are we going to feed the post. And there was a big conspiracy, and they passed it, and they got it all done. And I can tell you this right now. 20 years from now, they're going to be saying that layups do not exist, that layups were never part of the game of basketball. And it's kind of like these secular geologists saying there is no geological evidence for the flood because we say so. We're not going to acknowledge some aspect of real life just because it has something to do with God. Be just like these point guards saying, we're not going to acknowledge that we used to throw the ball inside in the paint. We're just going to shoot threes and say that layups never existed. That seems nonsensical, but it's kind of the same thing.
Well, there's some similarities there, but I think it's a little bit more, less obvious. There is a bias. I agree with you on that point. But it's a matter of being able to see beyond the bias and to actually see the reality of what you can find there. The bias blinds the secularist to his viewpoint. And as a result, he misses. And I think inadvertently, he doesn't have spiritual eyes. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm not introducing a spiritual aspect to the physical data, but he's unable to put together the data to be able to see a bigger picture. And maybe after we go through the model, it might become a little bit more obvious. Mm. But you're absolutely right. There is a bias that leaves God out and therefore omits some of the data, the biblical data that gives us an interpretation of the physical data. Mm. And when you have the interpretation, then you can better observe and see what's actually physically in the ground. And that's the basic difference here.
Well, we're going to come back and start letting you get into the details. We're going to take a commercial break. We'll be back with more with Ray Mondragon right after these messages.
Hey, Buddha King, owner of Car Spa here. I've had a job since maybe 11 years old. Broke was not in my vocabulary. Through work opportunities, I learned things like responsibility, discipline, go-get, setting goals, savings, teamwork, integrity, competitiveness, commitment, and self-worth. Recent Car Spa expansions requires that we hire more people across the ranks of associates, supervisors, and managers. We need to build more teams to meet the demand of our business. We have hourly and salary positions with benefits, with experience in performing. We are looking for the right people and energy for both full service and part-time to be a part of our team. We have an immediate and greatest need at our newest Westside Coors location, but are hiring at all sites. Drop by early morning, Sunday through Wednesday, fill out an app, and interview a manager, and join the team.
Can church still happen when church is closed? It already is. With Calvary Church at Home, all regularly scheduled Calvary Church services are still happening. Our midweek and weekend services are broadcast online at live.calvarynm.church so we can continue to pray, worship, and receive biblical teaching even when we can't gather together as a congregation. So don't miss worship with battle drums. Plus a fresh teaching from Pastor Skip Heitzig on Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m., Saturdays at 6:30 p.m., and Sundays at 8, 9:45, or 11 a.m. During Calvary at-home services, you can engage in live chat with Calvary Church pastors. Submit prayer requests and let us know how we can help you with your next step in growing in your relationship with Jesus and people. And if you're healthy and willing, host or join a watch party with five or fewer friends, neighbors, or family members. And join us together for Calvary Church at Home at live.calvarynm.church.
To improve the driving habits of American motorists, we just need enough police officers in their cruisers to follow every driver around all day. That's preposterous, of course, but you get my point. It's easy for us to be on our best behavior when we believe we are being watched. The true test of who we are is what we do when no one is watching. But the truth is, we're never in that situation because God is always watching. He watches the hairs of our head and hears every idle word we speak. Let His presence be a godly influence in your life today. This is David Jeremiah encouraging you to get on the road to new life. Discover God's presence on Route 66.
Route 66, driving the word home. Log on to Route66Life.com and get your roadmap for life. That's Route66Life.com. Route 66, start your journey home today.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome back to ABQ Connect. For many of us this year, our Mother's Day celebrations will look a little bit different than usual. Calvary Church wants to celebrate with you and your family at their Mother's Day drive-in services on Saturday, May 9th at 6:30 p.m. and again Sunday, May 10th at 9 a.m. and 11:30 a.m. Come worship with battle drums and hear the message from Pastor Skip live from the Osuna campus parking lot on the east side of the church. Tickets are free, but limited to 900 cars per service. Attendees will be required to stay in their vehicles at all time. To register for tickets, go online at eventbrite.com. That's eventbrite.com. Free tickets to the Mother's Day celebration worked really well for Easter. It was really a spectacular event and a lot of fun. And I understand some other churches in the community are kind of picking up on the idea. Love all this creativity, Ray, that people are coming up with. And technology, I think, is probably going to completely change the way we hear about God and share God. And I know, Ray, your website is a great resource for people. ForHisGloryNM.com. So Ray's not only a Bible teacher and a creation scientist, but he has a lot of expository studies, free resources for you available on his website. Ray, let's get going on creation science and the evidence, the scientific evidence for the worldwide flood.
Well, let me begin by just explaining the data itself. In other words, what do geologists look at when they are studying the geological record? Mm-hmm. If you would, for example, anywhere on the face of the earth, if you were to drill a hole about a mile and a half deep, some places it's only a mile, some places it's a little less, but if you would dig a hole and or just cut away so that you could see kind of a vertical picture of what's in the ground. Now, I sent you a chart that I'm trying to explain here, and I'm trying to make it more visual by just describing it.
Right.
But if you were to cut away and be able to see what's in the ground, you would encounter layer after layer after layer of different kinds of rock, different kinds of material. And what geologists do, they look at those layers, and they will go down, for example, in the Grand Canyon. If you've ever visited the Grand Canyon, you can see a lot of that layering, and you will see it's even different colors. Some of them are slightly different from the others, but you have all of these layers. That's the data. That's what the geologist looks at. That's the same thing that the believer who knows a little bit about geology or geophysics, we will look at that same data and try to come to some conclusions. The historical geologist with a background of evolution sees within those layers, they see fossils, and there's a variety of different fossils, and there's different accumulations of fossils within certain layers that kind of distinguish some of these layers as well. In fact, they identify these different layers depending on the fossils that you find in those layers.
Mm.
So you'll find around, geologists have names for about 25 of them, if I remember right, down to what would be described basement rock. In other words, this is more volcanic, that is not sedimentary. All of those layers were laid down either by water or by wind, and it's called sedimentary rock. So you have like 20, 25 layers of rock, and it extends to, about a mile. In the Grand Canyon, it goes down to about that depth.
Mm.
So what the historical geologist looks at each of those layers, and he identifies certain fossils with them, and you can, in some cases, you can see very clear boundaries between one layer and another layer. Sharp boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the data. That's what you have to evaluate. So the question is, were these layers laid down over long periods of time? And the geologist, because he comes from an evolutionary perspective, and he can make some measurements today concerning how long it takes to accumulate a certain amount of sediment as a result of a river flood in a localized area, he'll take some of that data and project it back and come up with, for example, some people might be familiar with the Jurassic layer.
Mm-hmm.
That made famous by the movie. You remember the movie Jurassic Park?
It's
yes. Named after that geological layer. And that geological layer, in some places, like at the Grand Canyon, it's maybe 50 feet deep or more. And in that, the geologist will figure out, well, if it takes a certain amount of time to lay, let's say, a foot of sediment in conditions today, then we can project back and they come up with 45 million years that it would take to have accumulated all the material in that Jurassic layer. And they'll do that for each layer, and they'll come up with millions and millions of years of layering. So he's looking at that same data, and we're looking at those same rock layers and saying, it makes more sense, and that's what I'm going to stress, makes more sense that those layers were laid down rapidly in a huge flood like that's described in the book of Genesis.
Hmm.
And you can trace what the Genesis flood damaged because you can go all the way down to the layer that just above the basement rock.
Hmm.
And that is very different from the rock below. The rock below is mantle rock, essentially. It's volcanic rock. Everything above is layers and layers and layers of sedimentary rock laid down either by wind and or water. Now, the more recent geologists believe that water laid down each of those. So you're looking at floods or the layering as a result of water over long periods of time. So that's the way the historical geologist interprets that data. And that bottom layer, it's called the Cambrian. That's the layer that's just above this basement rock. That's where fossils begin to show up. And then you have fossils all the way to the surface. So you have about a mile of depth of rock layer after rock that are identified by different names depending on the fossils. And that's why the historical geologist thinks that it took millions and millions of years for these rock layers to accumulate. But that same data can be interpreted from a different perspective from a Genesis flood model. And if the data in the book of Genesis is correct, we have one flood that was worldwide that occurred over 370 days. Genesis is that specific.
Mm-hmm.
So over a year of time, the floodwaters came and would have ripped up large, huge quantities of land land masses, redistributed it, laying down the material layer by layer by layer as the material settled out. And obviously, with the destruction and what's described in Genesis, you have the death of not only humanity, but all of the animals, and the fossils would be the evidence of all of that death. So in a simple way, that's the difference between the two models, the secular model, and how we would interpret all of those layers in a different way. And there's a model as to how this all came about that has been out there for, 20 years maybe, by actually a scientist that did some of his work here in New Mexico. He spent most of his career working for Los Alamos National Labs, and he had an arrangement with them that he could use their computers, and he developed a computer model that simulated a Genesis flood. And at the time, it required the entire capacity of that computer at Los Alamos National Labs, and they had one of the best ones in the world. And he would do his work at three in the morning, or late in the morning, or how would you put that? Early in the morning.
Early in the morning. Yep.
Because it took the capacity of the entire computer and basically shut everything else down. And he came up with a flood model from a simulation that gives some evidence for a universal flood. And the results of that, you can find it on the web, actually, Baumgartner's model. But essentially, the first line of evidence is there any evidence that something occurred that is very unusual on the face of the earth? And John Baumgartner, who has a PhD in geophysics, worked for Los Alamos until he retired. He's still doing research. He doesn't live here in Albuquerque anymore, or Los Alamos. But during World War II, there were some observations that were made that kind of spurred him to rethinking some things in terms of the Earth. Mm-hmm. And being a geophysicist, he began to think in terms of what would have caused this phenomenon that I'm going to describe. In fact, your audience may have heard of what's called the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. Have you ever heard of that, Jim, yourself?
I have heard of the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, yes. But I've heard it in relationship to earthquakes.
Yes, yes. And by the way, John Baumgartner has done a lot of work in plate tectonics. That's the source of earthquakes today. And his flood model includes the movement of large plates, you might say, of land masses that make up not only the continents, but all of the land masses of the Earth. But anyway, back to the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. During World War II, when we had submarines that were traversing the Atlantic Ocean with their sonar were detecting what appeared to be mountain ranges at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. Today we know that there is a complete mountain range that goes from almost pole to pole. So it traverses the entire length of the Earth. And this is a mountain range that was formed by volcanic action. In other words, it's lava rock that formed that mountain range. You don't see it. Now, there are some places where there's some islands, but it's all under the Atlantic Ocean. And if you took out all of the water, you would see a mountain range down there.
Mm-hmm.
And John Baumgartner started to think, well, what formed that? So nobody contests this. In other words, this is scientific. This has been observed. And since World War II, it's been mapped, and we know a lot about it. And it's very clear that it is volcanic, and it is a mountain range. John Baumgartner thought, perhaps, and with his understanding of plate tectonics and movements of land masses, there has been this theory that when God created the landmass, there was only one continent. Mm-hmm. And perhaps at the flood, that one continent was broken up, and what was left after massive movements and massive volcanic action was this mid-Atlantic ridge at the bottom of the ocean. But because the range is underwater, what you would have is volcanic action coming in contact with the ocean waters. And if you have hot lava coming in contact with water, it could even be hot water, it's going to produce a massive amount of steam.
Mm-hmm.
And that steam, in some cases, is going to shoot up like fountains into the atmosphere because of the intense heat and the rapid evaporation as a result of that contact. Mm-hmm. So that second picture that I showed you is the exposing of this volcanic material to the bottom of the ocean, producing tremendous amount of steam that would produce these thick clouds that potentially could produce a rainstorm of 40 days and 40 nights. Mm. And it would be global because of the massive amount of action taking place over that whole strip.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the Pacific, you can observe what's called the Ring of Fire. It's a similar phenomenon. So you may have two things going on at the same time during the Genesis flood. Now, climatologists today will tell you that the atmosphere is incapable of containing the amount of rain that would be required for a 40-day, 40-night event. But if you have a constant generating of this steam on a worldwide basis, then you could produce enough clouding and evaporation and a supersaturation of the atmosphere that would cause a rain of 40 days and 40 nights. But that was not the only destructive forces taking place if, in fact, this model that John Baumgartner came up with accurately represents what took place during the Genesis flood. But I think you're probably coming up on a break here.
Yes.
Describe that some more. Is that?
Yeah, we'll let you keep going, Ray. As soon as we come back, stay with us on ABQ Connect.
Here's Ava, the owner of Monroe's.
Dad, I think we're in deep doo-doo.
Is that why everyone keeps buying all the toilet paper?
Actually, New Mexico culture is rich. Plus, Monroe's has red chili, green chili, and the best customers in the world to go with it.
Boy, Dad, you must really love our customers.
I sure do, just like I love you, Stella.
Hey, what about me?
Of course you too, Ava.
Treat yourself to a delicious Monroe's meal. See Monroe's menu at monroeschili.com. Then call in your order to Monroe's on Osuna at 881-4224 or Monroe's downtown at 242-1111 for carryout or free delivery.
Life can take an unexpected turn in your home or business by fire or flood. As a result, you may have mold problems. Let the experts put your mind at ease with a quick response from locally owned water extraction experts. They'll provide service within the hour, are available 24/7 for emergencies, and work with all insurance companies. Professional, certified, and friendly technicians are here to do the job right the first time. Call the experts now at 505-250-6500 or visit them online at waterextractionexperts.com.
Gonstead Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury, pain in your back, neck, shoulders, arms, and legs, as well as numbness in your extremities. Dizziness and bladder or bowel issues can all be symptoms. 90% of doctors treating spinal ligament injuries don't know how to determine the severity and location of this condition. At Gonstead Physical Medicine, all of the providers are trained to do this. Schedule a consultation today at gonstead-nm.com or 505 8 8 4 85 84.
Heroes on the front lines, in hospitals, clinics, police, and fire stations, all over Albuquerque, they sacrifice their lives to keep ours safe. At KNKT and Star 88, we want to give them a shout-out of thanks. We're dropping off food and treats in the name of our stations and you, our listening family. Here are the power partners making this possible.
Partnering with Monroe's Restaurant and Latitudes.
KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Want to say thank you to all of our frontline healthcare workers and one of our sponsors, Sergio's Bakery and Cafe. Their way of saying thank you is to invite you to come by their store. They are located at 2740 Wyoming Northeast, Suite 8 in the Fidelity Shopping Center. Again, Candelaria and Wyoming. If you are a frontline healthcare worker, you can go into their store before May 15th or any time or every day before May 15th to get a free donut, Danish, and a free coffee every day if that's what you'd like to do. They open up at 7 a.m. Again, Sergio's Bakery and Cafe is located at 2740 Wyoming Northeast, Suite 8. And for all of us just consumers, you can buy one, get one free on all bread, donuts, Danish cookies, and coffee to help everybody start the day fresh. That's Sergio's Bakery and Cafe. Give them a call or stop by. Their phone number is 554-2602. And Ray Mondragon, Creation Science Fellowship, is on the phone with us this afternoon. I want to refer you to a couple of web addresses for you to get some great information. Ray's webpage is forhisglorynm.com. Creation Science Fellowship also has a lot of free resources all regarding everything we're talking about today and more. You can go to CSF, that's Creation Science Fellowship, CSFNM for New Mexico.org. A lot of great information. Ray, you started on a roll, and we're going to let you go some more, talking to us about all of this scientific evidence for a worldwide flood. I did want to say one thing to you. You mentioned on a sheet of paper that you sent me before the opening of the show in preparation from Genesis 7, where it says, water came from the great deep, all the fountains.
Yeah, I was going to get into that.
Okay, well, I date myself here, and you may not even remember this, but back in the day, we used to have the first real adventurer out there was a guy named Jacques Cousteau. He's the guy that invented the aqualung. And I remember him finding those vents at the bottom of the ocean, very deep, where it looked like that water was coming out of these vents. Could that be anything related to the Great Flood?
Well, I think that's the aftermath of the flood. In fact, we're living today, just to answer your question, we're living today in a what we could describe as a post-flood environment. And what we mean by that, there are still some after effects, even though the flood has been a few thousand years ago, we are still living in the aftermath of that, which could also account for some of the climatological issues that we have today. So, yes, the answer to your question would be yes.
Well, Ray, you mentioned right before the break the Ring of Fire, and only thing I know about that is occasionally Japan is having all kinds of volcanic activity, and there's like this big circle that goes all around the Pacific Ocean and even affects the west coast of the United States and California, and they call that the Ring of Fire. Is that right?
That's correct. And it's similar in that you have underground mountains. In fact, the Hawaiian island chain are where those mountains have reached to the surface and produced small, in comparison, small little islands in the Pacific Ocean. So, yes. But that brings us to the issue that you were alluding to at the very beginning. John Baumgartner, as he's thinking through this Mid-Atlantic range and what it could have been, how it could have been formed, and he's thinking of what the Bible teaches concerning a Genesis flood, and he's putting the two together. He sees in Genesis 7:11 And here's where we have one of the specific dates. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month on the 17th day, very precise, down to the day, on that day of the month, on the same day, all the fountains of the great deep burst open. Now, scholars don't debate the great deep. That word throughout scripture refers to oceans. In other words, the great depth of oceans, in some places miles deep. Mm-hmm. And apparently there are fountains at the bottom of the mountain, of this deep, or at the bottom of the oceans.
Mm-hmm.
And but what Baumgartner came up with is that word, fountains, could either be a reference to volcanic fountains and or this tremendous amount of steam, and more than likely, maybe a combination of both, this tremendous amount of steam that would shoot up out of the ocean bottom all the way as far as it would reach into the sky and then eventually produce these thick clouds. So, yes. And then as a result of that, then we have verse 12, and the rain fell upon the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. Now, what's not mentioned, and as part of the geology that John Bombard came up with, when you would have material that is coming, red-hot material coming out of the mantle, in order to maintain stability, you're going to have displacement of existing land masses, and in some cases, continents dropping down in order to keep that balance, and you would also have tsunamis of tremendous force created such that you'd have floodwaters of thousands of feet of water overtaking these land masses and ripping everything off of the surface.
Wow.
All of the soil material, including entire forests, including obviously all creatures, all of mankind. The only ones that would be left would be those that are floating on the surface of the ocean in some craft, like a huge boat that's also described in the Genesis account.
Ray, I don't want to interrupt.
What John came up with is as the waters and the tsunamis are ripping up material, they're displacing it. And now what you find in the rock layers, these rock layers are the result of material settling out of rapidly moving tsunami waters, and depending on the density of the material, et cetera, you have different materials at different levels accumulating. And the text also tells us that the flood ended and there's a receding of the waters such that the waters leave the land masses, and what's left are the condition of the continents as we see them today.
Mm. Ray, I have a question Ray, can you hear me?
Go ahead.
Let me ask you a quick question. I know it's awkward when you're somewhere else and I'm here and the phone lines, I know you can't hear me real clearly, and I apologize for interrupting, but I've got a listener that has written in a question. I think it's applicable to what you're talking about now, obviously in New Mexican, and they say, what does Carlsbad Cavern say about the flood?
That's a good question. That's another aftermath of the Genesis flood. In fact, that whole area you can see deposited there. You remember the white sands and the gypsum and all of the material that you find in that southern New Mexico area. There's lots of salts. Something moved large quantities of those materials and left them there. And some of that material is different from other areas.
Mm.
We would say from this flood model that all of that was deposited. It was moved from somewhere and all deposited because it had a similar composition and density, et cetera, and was placed there. And the caverns would be as a result of an aftermath of waters leaving that area, seeping and producing the surface water that seeps down and producing the stalactites and stalagmites after the Genesis flood. Mm. All of that would be produced after the flood.
Well, I can tell you, having been...
I don't know if that answers the question.
Well, no, I'm sure that they're blessed by the answer. I'm just fascinated. I try to encourage our listeners to get out to this amazing state that we have. Now, I know we're quarantined at home and our national parks, there's 35 of them that are currently closed, hoping a lot of that starts to open up again. But our state, New Mexico, if you are a New Mexican and all you're doing is staying in your community, you are missing a lot. Our state has a lot to offer, amazing beauty, amazing things, not even just beauty, but amazing creations. When you go in to see the stalactites and the stalagmites in a place like Carlsbad Caverns, how they were formed, watch the bats fly. It's just crazy at night when those bats are coming out of the caves and, you know, going out to feed and do all the things that they're doing. So we've got a lot in our state. And Ray, no, your answer's great. Let me let you continue right after these messages. We're going to say thank you to some sponsors. We'll be right back.
We can change the world with the words we say. Hi, I'm Lisa Turkers with Proverbs 31 Ministries. One day I was eating in a restaurant, and every time our server came to the table, she had something really kind to say. I was amazed by her gracious attitude, and I found it was quite contagious. So I challenged myself to make a conscious effort to use my words as a gift to each person that I came in contact with the rest of that day. You know, in a world that promotes tearing others down to build ourselves up, we can make a difference by using our words to bless and encourage. Let's look at those who we come in contact with today as people who really need a kind word or two. I've found that giving kind words, it's one of the greatest ways to make the love of Jesus known to so many who desperately need it. For more, visit Proverbs31.org.
A Harvest America Moment with Pastor Greg Laurie.
In the Greek Games, the Olympics, that go back many, many years, they didn't give out gold, silver, and bronze like they do today. They gave laurel leaves that the victor would wear. And so if you're running that race and you're coming toward the end of the race, you would see the emperor standing there holding the laurel leaves that you would want placed on your head. That was the reward. So you should keep running your race for Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith. We're not doing it for applause. We're not doing it for fame. We're not doing it for any other thing. We just want to hear him say to us one day, well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your Lord.
Impact the world with the gospel by knowing God and making him known. Connect with Pastor Greg Laurie and sign up to receive his free daily devotion emails. To get started, visit harvest.org today.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We are on the phone this afternoon with Ray Mondragon, Creation Science Fellowship. He's also a teacher at Chafer Seminary, and his website is called forhisglory.com. You can get all kinds of free information, Bible study information, exegetical teaching. Do you have some videos too, Ray, that you have available to people?
Some of it is on video, but not a whole lot. I've got a couple of things on there. But along those lines, I sent you those charts, and I use a lot of visuals. I'm trying to describe to your radio audience the things that I put on a slide to make it more evident. So I've got a couple of talks that I've done. Actually, there's probably about three or four of them on the website that I've done in different places where all of the visuals are there, and you can see that. That sketch that I sent to you that gives you Baumgartner's model along with the other sketch. I'm trying to describe it, but I think if you can see it, it's better. So on the site, you can see all of the slides that I use as well.
Well, I think these slides are great. And you mentioned John Baumgartner, and you spelled it Baumgardner. So Baumgartner, and that's somebody I'd encourage everybody to Google because he's come up with some information and a former Los Alamos scientist. I always encourage our listeners to check everything out. You know how the Bible talks about us being as the Bereans, to not just listen to what people say, but to go check it out. So again, we all want to use our brains. We have plenty of time to do that right now because we have a little extra time at home trying to encourage people. Hey, it's one thing, like I just got, you're talking about the canyons in the Atlantic Ocean, and I watched this weekend The Hunt for Red October, which is one of my favorite movies. And they were talking about the hyperactive maps that Russia had of the underwater canyons in exactly the area you're describing. So I was thinking about that we were talking. So I'm watching a few things on TV, but I've been primarily spending my time reading and looking through all these cool websites and all this great information. So thank you for providing it, Ray. And you've even got a great bibliography that I know is available on your site, of all kinds of resources for people to read. So, Ray, we're going to end up now with about 8 minutes left, so we got to move along pretty quickly to get a little bit farther along in our discussion today.
Okay. Well, let me finish the description of this flood model. And by the way, I was thinking while we were on the break, you were encouraging people to get out into the state. Well, all they have to do is just look out their back door window or front door window and look at the crest there. The Sandia crest there, though, you can see the layering at the top. Now, geologists believe that that layer that you can visually see at the crest all the way to the top is the Pennsylvanian layer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they would say it took 40 million years to form, but if it formed during the Genesis flood, then it formed rapidly. But that Pennsylvanian layer is about in the middle of the layers that you'll find in most other places around the world. It's one of the center ones on their geological column that the historical geologist calls.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the weaknesses of this chart. In fact, let me go into some of those weaknesses, why I think the historical geologist is missing something. Now, we don't dispute that in general, you can find these layers, but one of the things you need to keep in mind, in a geology book, they'll have it in a nice, neat chart, and it looks nice and clean and looks like it's very scientific, but one of the things you need to keep in mind, it is a theoretical chart. Nowhere on the face of the earth will you find all of those layers all in the same place.
Mm.
And a vivid example of that is here in Albuquerque on Sandia Crest, you can see the Pennsylvanian, but on the chart, you have a Permian, you have a Triassic, you have a Jurassic, you have a Cretaceous layer, then you have several smaller layers, the Cenozoic layers, which you have, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them. So all of those are above. So this chart is kind of a composite of what you might be able to find represented at any one place, but nowhere on the face of the earth do you have all of them. And there's been some studies by creationists that show some other weaknesses of this chart. It's obviously based on evolution and lots of weaknesses with that as well. There's a better explanation, and the better explanation is the flood model that we just described.
Ray, I remember when let me ask you a question. When I was really young, I want to say I was fourth or fifth grade, I remember taking a large glass jar, and we went into a sand pile, and our teacher took several scoops of the sand and then filled up the jar with water and stirred everything up really, really quickly. So it was swirling around. And by the time that all of the sand had settled, you saw a layer. I can't remember the order they were in, but there were different layers laid out. And the one that sticks in my mind is the iron that was in the water that we all used to pull out of there with magnets. You know, you'd throw your magnet in the sand and all this iron would stick to it. But this, the way it layered out at the bottom of this jar was very similar to what you're describing.
Yeah. In fact, that's an excellent visual to, you can even do an experiment like you did. That's exactly what would have happened on a massive scale. Obviously, you're talking about depths of water in the thousands of feet, and you have the movements of these large masses of water that would rip up entire boulders bigger than your studio. And you can find, by the way, in that what's called the Cambrian layer, that's the bottom layer, you can see it in the Grand Canyon. In fact, the line that divides the Cambrian and what's called the Precambrian layer, they call the Great Unconformity. Now, this is the historical geologist. This is not a name that a believer gave to it, but they recognize that there's a radical difference between the Cambrian and the Precambrian. And if you go to the Grand Canyon or where you can see that boundary, you will see huge boulders at the bottom, and you would expect them to settle out, just like probably your gravels settled out to the bottom of your little experiment that you just described. Mm-hmm. You can see boulders of a massive size, and they're all accumulated together, so something huge moved them, and then now they're deposited in that Cambrian layer. And you see other similar phenomenon. Those are some of the things that we'll talk about when we talk some more about the evidence. We're going to build on what we laid a foundation for today. I just wanted to describe the two ways of interpreting the same material, the same data.
Well, and for what it's worth, Ray, I've hiked a lot on the Sandia Mountains, and I have personally found a couple of fossils, which we actually provided them to the University of New Mexico, and they indicated that that was a sea life form. That's what they told us.
Yeah. Yeah. Much of the fossils that you find, even on the tops of mountains, are sea creatures or fossilized sea creatures. Exactly. And like I said, that Pennsylvanian layer that you can see on the top of the crest there, it's full of fossils, and it'll have the characteristic fossils that they identify as the Pennsylvanian rock formation. That's why they name it that.
Right.
And you'll find fossils throughout every one of the layers above the Precambrian layer, including the Cambrian layer. And the historical geologist looks at that from an evolutionary perspective. But I think it gives a better picture if you can imagine this flood model that we've described on a gigantic scale that you can't even envision. And that's what Genesis describes. It describes an event that is unimaginable in terms of anything that we are familiar with in terms of any floods that exist today. Even Katrina, that is recent, and even the Houston flood more recently, those are puny in comparison to what this flood model is describing.
You know, you did describe that some of these layers could have at least been affected by wind, and all of us have seen recently these devastating tornadoes that we've seen in the southern part of the United States. And those things come in and just uproot giant trees and rip up the landscape. And so some of those forces could have been at work also. But that might reinforce your idea that nowhere do you find the same layers right in a row in the geological column. You don't find all of them in one area.
Yes, you'll find maybe five or six together. But another weakness is sometimes you have them out of place. You might have a Permian layer above the Jurassic, and that's not the way it's pictured on the chart. And you might find one, you might even find in some places two layers of the same separated.
Wow.
But I can see that we're running out of time, so we're going to have to continue this discussion next time.
Next time we get together, Ray, we'll talk all about fossils and how that supports the worldwide flood that's talked about in the Bible. Thank you, Ray, for joining us today.
Thank you, Jim. It was a pleasure.
Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.